Hey, you guys. It seems kind of brighter in here than usual. Why is that?
The camera's fucked up.
The camera's not fucked up. It's okay.
I'm in the wrong spot.
You're in the wrong spot. And also, that bathroom door is open and the sunlight is coming in through the window.
Yeah, it's bright in here.
Which is, weird. I kind of like it dark so you can't really see my face all that well. Soon I'm just going to start combing my hair forward, like causing it. That's what I'm going to do. But, so hi, everybody. It's Monday. And today we are talking about Eyes of Laura Mars.
Yeah. It was a pretty good flick, man. This is a Carpenter flick.
Sort of.
He didn't direct it, but he wrote the screenplay.
Although, I will say that, like, it went through a lot of changes. I guess most of the time they do, but... You had not seen this, right?
Uh-uh. I haven't seen it. I was impressed. It's kind of an all-star cast. Even though people in this probably weren't all that famous during the time.
They absolutely were.
They were famous?
Faye Dunaway had actually just won an Oscar on her prior film, which was Network.
Yeah.
Tommy Lee Jones had been... He wasn't, like, a megastar, but he had been in several things.
Yeah.
So...
He was young in this.
Yeah.
He had a unibrow, too.
Oh, yeah, big time.
He had a bony old head.
See, like you thought that I was imagining the unibrow. Because the first time he came on the screen, I was like, wow, way to make that unibrow work for you, Tommy Lee.
I thought it was just, he's got a bony ass head, you know what I mean? It looks like, I don't want to say he looks like a Neanderthal, but he's got a real strong brow ridge. He looks like a damn werewolf or a vampire or something. And I thought it was just a shadow. But no, that motherfucker had a unibrow right across it. But, you know, that's just how it was in the 70s.
Well, see, in the 70s, that would have been, like, too feminine to actually, like, tweeze your brows. Something. I'm a man. I don't tweeze my brows.
Although they had makeup on them.
Well, yeah.
Just, you know.
Well, like I said, it doesn't make any sense. It
doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Obviously. But I'm just saying that's probably what they would have thought of. No, real manly men should be all hairy. We don't do that. We don't pluck.
Had the dude that played Gomez from Adam Family 1 and 2.
Raul Julia.
Yeah, he was a youngster in it, too.
I think he got this part because he lived in the same building as one of the other actors. I can't remember which one. But he's basically like, hey, they're casting this movie. Why don't you come be in it? And he came and got in it.
There's a whole bunch of people in it that if you see him, you go, he's in it or she's in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I liked it. It was good about this New York fashion photographer. And she's having visions. But they show her like... her at work and doing photo shoots. It's just fucking crazy. It's like late 70s / early 80s looking fashion. They're fucking turning cars over on their downtown New York, turning cars on their sides and setting them on fire and doing a ridiculous photo shoot. All of New York watching. Like back when a photographer was important. Back when they had fashion magazines and shit.
You could actually list, like, shoot in New York City back then.
Back when a photographer could make money.
Well, some did, and actually the photographs in this were actually based on the work of a real photographer, like a German photographer, Helmut Newton.
That's what I was saying, you know, back then they didn't have an internet, you know, they only had one media, there's a print and a television and a little bit of radio, and if you could make a name in either one of those three, that was it, you were making millions of dollars. You couldn't do that now. We got all kinds of fantastic photographers, they're just on the internet.
Well, yeah, like I said, back then it was much more expensive to get into it, just like movie making, just like everything else. Slasher Fred points out this movie also stars actor Brad Dourif.
Yeah, I forgot to say.
Decade. Yeah, he had actually, he was also not a megastar, although he had been in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest prior to this. And I think he got an Oscar nomination.
He was in the old Dune. He played fucking Mentat Piter Veres. The fucking Harkonnen Mentat.
Voice of Chucky.
Voice of Chucky. He was also in Exorcist 3. Did a fantastic job.
Very underrated role there.
Yeah, on Exorcist 3, which is a masterpiece, really.
I love that movie.
It's a good movie, yeah.
I like that it's gotten a critical reassessment, because I kind of feel like it got... I mean, Exorcist 2 can kind of suck a dick. That one was kind of terrible, but the third one's awesome.
Yeah, it was real good. It's like a good standalone.
Yeah, you don't have to have even seen the first one. Mm-hmm. It's not really all that important.
No.
But, so the interesting thing about this, which I actually had completely forgotten about, I saw this movie a bunch of times on cable back in the early 80s, because it seemed like it was always on. Yeah. So I had seen it a bunch of times, and I remember really digging it. Like, it was, like, kind of creepy. I didn't know, like, in the early 80s, I didn't know anything about giallo movies, but this is essentially an American take on a giallo film. You know, kind of, because, you know, it's set in, like, a high fashion kind of world, and it's a good glamorous and stuff like that. So it's kind of very similar with the POV shots and whatnot. So what ended up happening with this was that the thing that I had forgotten was that the original spec script for this was written by John Carpenter. Yes, that John Carpenter. What happened was, after he had made Dark Star, he had actually written two spec scripts, one of which was Assault on Precinct 13, which he obviously went on to direct, and one of which was a sort of neo-noir giallo slasher movie called Eyes. Now, he was actually going to direct this, but what ended up happening was that there was this guy who was like he was like hairdresser to the stars, but he had like a shit ton of money, and he had made like a lot of connections through fixing everyone's hair. And he was also dating Barbara Streisand. And he liked this script so much that he essentially bought it from John Carpenter as a starring vehicle for Barbara Streisand. She was actually supposed to be in this.
Yeah.
Now, as it came out, I guess what they tried to do, I think at first, they were kind of trying to like go in like a more romantic thriller kind of direction as opposed to like a horror thriller direction. I kind of got the idea from John Carpenter, the way he's talked about this, that initially it started out as more of like a slasher movie kind, or more like a giallo movie where the killer was just kind of like some nobody. It wasn't really like, it was just like a random person, because he thought that was scarier, which is not how the movie ended up going. What ended up happening was that when it started going back into the more horror direction, Barbara Streisand didn't really want to do it because she thought it was like too lurid or grotesque or whatever. And she's like, she didn't want to do it, but she did contribute the song, which you actually like that song, don't you?
Yeah.
That is actually a good song. It's called Prisoner. The song at the beginning. And
about the movie.
Yeah, that actually did pretty good on the charts. But yeah, so she didn't want to be in it. So they had to find another actress. And they also brought in a guy to do the rewrite on the script, who actually turned out to be David Zelig Goodman, who was the same guy that wrote Logan's Run and what the fuck else. He also wrote Straw Dogs. So they brought that guy in to kind of like redo it. And then they were kind of like looking around for different actresses. I think they were maybe Goldie Hawn would be in it, maybe like a couple other people. But they asked Faye Dunaway, and like I said, Faye Dunaway had just won an Oscar. So, and this was kind of like a lower budget. It's not like a tiny budget, but it was kind of.
It doesn't seem low budget, though.
Yeah, but it was kind of a little bit more of, I don't want to say it was an indie flick necessarily, but it was kind of a more independently financed flick.
Yeah, it's definitely not a mainstream movie.
Yeah.
But it's like a high end, in a weird way, it's kind of like a high end horror suspense type thing. Almost fucking romance. It has a sexy element to it. It's very 70s, but it's high end. It kind of feels like you're watching The Exorcist 1, kind of. I mean, now that Exorcist kind of had a gravitas to it,
yeah.
This has that, even though the tone is very different. You just got to see it. It's shot really well. I liked how it felt.
Like I said, it very much is like an American take on a giallo film. And yeah. I've even called this, I think even at the time, like some of the critics called it the disco giallo.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very funny. Thank you very much, Sticky Marks.
What do you say? Anything?
Okay. No, it's just a...
It has a very sex appeal angle to this movie, but it's still... I don't want to say the slasher. It is kind of a horror suspense type psycho thriller, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd probably be a good way to put it. It has paranormal shit in it.
It's basically like a psychic kind of, you know, so it reminds me of like a giallo, but with a little bit of a psychic thing in it. Like that Lucio Fulci movie, which was called The Psychic.
A lot more coherent than an Italian giallo movie, though. It's got a very coherent edit.
Like this one, it's much, in some ways, like the plot twists and stuff like that are kind of the same. But yeah, you can follow the narrative like a lot easier.
It's got a real good score. A lot of good-looking people in there, you know. They got a lot of hot model chicks and shit, and fucking Dunaway looks fantastic, and fucking Tommy Lee's doing his thing, and it's just Brad Dourif in it, fucking acting like a freak. It's good. It's good. It's a very entertaining movie.
Although Brad Dourif acts fairly normal in this. Fairly normal.
He was funny. He's not playing a comedic role, But the shit that he says comes off as funny. You just have to see it.
Yeah.
You just have to see
This was actually direct. Here's another thing that I didn't realize. This was actually ended up being directed by Irvin Kershner, the same guy that directed The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, okay.
Like the year after this. And in fact, it was this movie that made George Lucas go, hey, I want that dude to direct Empire Strikes Back. So this is at the nexus of like all kind of things that were happening.
I'm recognizing talent, man. I'm recognizing talent. And I just, it's a very good movie to watch. It does keep you in the movie. It goes all over the place a bit, but it is still coherent. It's kind of like a journey through what was really fucking cool in the 1970s, mixed with some paranormal stuff. So in a way, very much like a giallo.
Yeah, it's structured pretty much exactly like a giallo.
But very American.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, it does have that glamour, that high fashion glamour and everything like that. Yeah, so what the story is, like I said, is that Faye Dunaway, she plays Laura Mars. She's like a really famous fashion photographer, like I said. She's very, very well known. Like, not only, like, her shit's in, like, galleries and stuff like that, but it's also, like, in all the fashion magazines and in ads and whatnot. So, her thing, though, and I don't know if it's, like, implied that she's always done art like this or if it's just, like, a new direction that she's going in, but she's gotten really into photographing, and like I said, this is based on, I think his name's Helmut Newton, who's kind of a famous photographer, who would do kind of, like, these fashion shoots, but set up, like, murders kind of thing. Because there was kind of a thing for that. So she's been, like, exploring that in her work, but she's getting, like, all this blowback because they're like, well, do you think you're glamorizing violence and, you know, violence against women and stuff like that? So people are kind of, like, getting on her tits about it. And, you know, so they kind of go into that a little bit. It's not, like, super heavy-handed or anything like that. Like, it's not some big theme of the movie. But there is kind of that at the beginning where she's at a gallery and everyone's kind of like shitting on her about, you know, don't you think this is irresponsible or blah blah blah.
Yeah, there's some hints at bestiality and shit going on in the fucking photographs.
But see, I remember when there was a lot of high-end photography was going in this direction.
Yeah, it was. It was kind of going in a kind of crypto perverse kind of way.
Yeah,
the whole fashion angle of the movie actually has that very 70s Love Motel feeling to it. I still liked it. It's kind of, you know, if you were growing up during that time, you remembered the spirit of that time when you were a kid. It was good times. Fucking kind of hedonistic, but, you know, just the way it was. Now,
And Dermot also points out, and I forgot to mention him, sorry, is that Renee Auberjonois was in this as well.
Trey Simmons says that, says, I remember the trailers for this were creepy as fuck. Scared the shit out of me when they when I was eight. Says, yes, indeed.
I remember the trailers for this.
Trailers that had the damn voice of the eyes of Laura.
And then the eyes would be like,
eyes
close
glowing
up.
Eyes. What the fuck is going on? And you're like 8 or 9. You can't really fucking make it. You don't even understand the subject matter. You know, what's it talking about? Yeah, what? It was very vague and sinister sounding. You knew that murders were happening. That was it. And some eyes were glowing. She could see it.
Yeah, because that's essentially what starts happening, is that they don't explain why it happens or whether she could do that before. It's obviously, this is a new thing that she's developed, maybe since she started doing these more violent photographs.
Yeah.
She essentially starts seeing through the eyes of a murderer what's going on. Because what ends up happening is that she's been taking all these pictures, and then she's approached by the character John Neville, who's played by Tommy Lee Jones, and he's like the lieutenant who's in charge of the shit, and he basically brings her in and says, here are some unpublished police photographs of all these murders that have been going on. You know, nobody's seen these, and yet they look a lot like photographs that you've taken, almost as if you've seen them and you're restaging it.
Yeah.
And she says that she doesn't really want to say, because nobody wants to say, I'm having psychic visions of the shit, because everybody will just be like, yeah, right, you are.
This is the kind of shit that I grew up with, man. This is the 1970s. You still had parapsychology being taught in universities. It was like a higher evolved spiritism from the early 1900s, late 1800s. And your parents all, when my parents and fucking relatives, believed that all this was possible, which this set up the environment that happened with me with the fucking Mammoth Mountain. Now, who knows? I'd have heard that kids and young kids may be more open to what they call psychic experiences, or what the Native Americans call the spirit world and shit. maybe because they, I don't think, I've heard that little kids kind of naturally produce a certain amount of DMT, which can give kind of spiritual awareness or sensations of spiritual knowledge. Now, maybe in the 70s, because of damn the hallucinogens and the drugs and shit, and maybe that in the adults, and might have been some kind of synergy. Maybe people were naturally producing DMT and having poltergeist events and fucking clairvoyance and dreaming true. And it was, I remembered that stuff, people talking about it a lot more than they talk about now. And I had my experiences. And maybe it had something to do with the pre-internet era where people were more moving inward than outward. Maybe the Indians were onto something, you know. Maybe it's just naturally produced DMT, you know, fucking getting you in tune with the other dimensions. But just food for thought. Movies like this actually cause certain shit to happen in people. Because belief is a very powerful thing.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of feel like this one... it's not, like, overtly supernatural, no, but it does have, like, yeah, I mean, basically all she's doing, she doesn't really know what's going on until a little bit later. She just kind of thinks, well, she's taking pictures, but she gets these visions where she seems to be looking through someone else's eyes.
Maybe the taking of the pictures and all this artistic exposure and her is getting her fucking juices flowing, her psychic abilities flowing. Which in science, maybe she's starting to produce DMT and stuff and have spiritual awakenings. Maybe that's what they're getting at with the whole fashion photography angle. Plus, it gives the movie the chance to show hot people.
Well, yeah, like I said, that was kind of like the whole thing about giallo movies too, and that's why the Italians made so many of them, is that we can set it in all these glamorous, like a fashion house or, you know, all this other stuff, or, you know, a girls' school or whatever, or a dance academy, and then we can show, like, a bunch of hot people in various states of undress, and everyone's a winner.
Yeah.
So...
people will pay money, you're getting asses into seats.
That's what I mean.
That's what it was about.
And also, you get to see them horribly murdered, so, you know, that's,
again... more asses into seats.
Win-win. And there's, like, a large crossover between those two things. Which, like I said, I kind of feel like that's sort of where this was coming from. As I said, I don't know. John Carpenter, like, later went on the record as saying this was really not a great experience for him because the original script that he wrote, he said, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, the original script that I wrote I thought was very good, but then it got shat upon, quote unquote. So I'm not really sure how much they've changed it. It is still very much like a giallo. But one thing that's really interesting that they do in this film is that unlike Italian giallos, which are all about, like, the stylized violence, like, you know, let's see, like, a knife plunging right into, like, a human heart, you know what I mean, with blood spraying everywhere. Like, they were very into, like, the operatic violence, just very graphic. This one kind of, like, cuts away. It doesn't really, it sometimes shows, like, the aftermath, but it's not real violent or bloody.
Oscar said he just went and saw the damn trailers and understood why it would scare me as a kid. And then he says, as an unreliable narrator, I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, dude.
I actually watched the trailer earlier today because I was watching, there's another channel called Good Bad Flicks, and he had done kind of like a half hour breakdown where he was trying to get more people to watch this because, you know, he thought that it was unappreciated.
I haven't seen the trailer since I was a kid in the fucking movie theaters and shit back when I was like 8. So if I don't remember it correctly, then, you know, then fuck y'all. I just remember her eyes glowing and a voiceover, and there may have been more than one edit of the trailer too, because a lot of times they had long ones and short ones depending on how long it was running on television.
Yeah,
and I remember motherfucking being scary and shit. And
I remember that. Knowing
what it was about, really.
I think, honestly, I like the longer one. I think the one that I watched earlier today was the longer cut because it had a lot of scenes from the movie. Okay. It's like people piss and moan nowadays about trailers. It's like, oh, they give everything away. Yeah, go watch some ones from the 70s
and then the whole fucking movie and how it ended.
They tell you the whole fucking movie. Yeah. They're like 5 minutes long.
Yeah, people would joke back then in the 70s. I saw the trailer.
I don't need to see the movie now. I already know what happened.
Yeah, they had people saying that. I remember it was fucking
funny. I had kind of forgotten until I recently, I was kind of like on a kick and I was like, I want to see the trailer for this, that, and the other thing. I'm like, they gave away the whole movie. Yeah. The trailer's like 5 minutes long, and it's like every single good scene that was in there is just in there. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, nowadays
they stop doing that, though.
Nowadays they show a lot of stuff from the movie, but nowadays they're smart enough to kind of like do some misdirection.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, and we kind of talked about this when we were talking about Last Night in Soho, where it's like, if you see the trailer, you're kind of like, well, it gives the whole movie away, but it totally does not. But to see nowadays, they're like aware of that. So they're like, they try to do like misdirection kind of stuff. So then when you go see the movie, you're actually surprised. In the 70s, they basically just told you everything that was going to happen in the movie. And then you went and see it and you're like, yep, yep, that's what happened in the movie. That was right in the trailer. But yeah, so what ends up happening is that during the investigation, like all of these people around her, around Laura, end up getting killed. And she starts just freaking out, like this, you know, the killer's going to come after her or whatever. And her and John Neville, the cop, you know, Tommy Lee Jones, they start like falling in love. So there's like a romance thing, which is, you know, terribly unprofessional. But I mean, he even acknowledges that like later in the after. He's like, yeah, I should be trying to like catch a killer. But meanwhile, yeah, we're just like making out or what.
Yeah, this is an Italian fucking inspired movie. I'm gonna have to start digging through those bushes.
Digging through those bushes.
Yeah,
I like that.
That's some 70s shit there. Yeah,
parting the foliage. Yeah. That's what we're gonna be doing.
This is 1970, bitch. I'm here to fuck.
Yeah, pretty much. So I guess like the first person that they think it is poor Raul Julia, because Raul Julia is Faye Dunaway's, her character is Laura Mars's ex-husband, and he's kind of like sketchy. Like it's very much like a giallo in the sense that they're setting up all these people as like red herrings. Interestingly, and I didn't realize this, and I don't even think this is on the Wikipedia page, but I saw it like on another kind of like, really in-depth breakdown of this, was that they were actually rewriting, because so the director and Faye Dunaway like super really did not get along, so there was a lot of tension on the set. Also, they were kind of rewriting the script as it was going, because when they first started shooting it, they didn't know who the killer was going to be. So, which in a movie like this, I kind of feel like that's some important information, because even in a giallo film, even though they set up like 40 bajillion, red herrings, like every person in it is horrible and could be the killer easily, and everybody has a motive. But at least like when you go back and watch it, like, seeds are planted, like which person it actually does end up being, even though it's usually like super convoluted and weird. But this one, so I kind of feel like maybe, and I don't know, like maybe if you go back and watch this one, like the person who ends up being the killer, I don't know if there's any kind of clues that are seeded throughout that. And I think that's because they didn't decide until near the end, like who the killer was going to be. Because like I said, in the original script that John Carpenter wrote, the killer was not anybody that she knew. It was just some rando, because he thought that that was scarier, that it was just like a person that decided to target her for whatever. It's like it was almost kind of more like a deranged fan or stalker type situation rather than being somebody that she knew. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I mean, I don't know if I necessarily want to say what the outcome of this is. It is very giallo-y, but I don't know. Should I say? I mean, this movie's old, but a couple people in there said that they hadn't seen it.
Yeah, don't read it. Don't ruin it.
But people get accused, So Raul Julia gets accused, like Brad Dourif gets accused. Brad Dourif, by the way, plays her driver, Tommy. Yeah. He's great in it. I actually liked, I kind of liked his fluffy ass hair. I don't usually like that fluffy ass hair.
It's some wild ass. It was like a fro.
It was like a fro, and then like he had kind of like a scruffy beard, and I'm like, I don't usually like that look, but I'm like, that's working for him. Yeah. I'm liking that.
Well, he was young. He could pull it off.
Yeah.
If he was 10, 15 years older, it wouldn't have looked as good.
I always love Brad Dourif. He's always like the best thing.
Yeah. Crazy hair and shit. Facial hair.
Yeah,
when you're young, you can pull off some fucking.
I'm not about it usually, but I can't really say that across the board because it depends.
It all depends.
It depends on the person's face. It depends how they're wearing it. It depends on a lot of things. You can't just say I don't like that across the board.
You put a pair of like old lady glasses on an old lady, just looks like an old lady with glasses. You put old lady glasses on a cute 17-year-old girl, looks cute as shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just kind of like, and well, and we were talking, actually, we talked about this probably way too extensively. Like, while we were drunk, we were watching this.
Yeah.
I don't think we were drunk. We were a little bit inebriated.
This is a pro alcohol movie. You don't have to be paying a fucking whole hell of a lot of attention to have fun with a movie.
That's true. I mean, depending on what movie it is. But yeah, this one...
Yeah, you just free flowing. Yeah. Oh, check that out. Yeah. It's just showing you stuff.
And but we had a very long... I remember it being a very long discussion about Tommy Lee Jones's unibrow.
Yeah. We were fighting over whether it was there or if it was just a shadow.
Well, because like I said, the second he came on screen, I was like, oh my God. First, I was like, oh my God, I forgot that Tommy Lee Jones was ever that young.
Yeah.
And then two, I was like, wow, rocking the unibrow. Like I said, again... Not everybody can pull off a unibrow, but I'm like, I think he's kind of pulling it off. And then Tom's arguing, that's not a unibrow, it's just a shadow. I'm like, that is absolutely a unibrow.
And then they started to shift close up. Oh, yeah.
It totally is.
What impressed me was...
But he looked good in it.
Yeah. What one of the things that kind of shocked me is that he was a good-looking guy, but he's playing a leading man, and it was funny because they showed him without his shirt on. And it was just like how low the standards of physical fitness were back in the 70s.
Although he was like a big football player, only a couple years before that.
Yeah, but you can't tell. Nowadays, they would never do that. They'd have that, put that motherfucker on cycle. You got to look like a damn Marvel superhero star from fucking Marvel before they'll
in a way, like it's shitty, but I kind of like it because it's like, look, women have had to like endure this. You have to look this perfect to be in a movie. And I kind of like that now they're doing it to dudes too.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it sucks.
Well, hey, man, fucking, and that shit goes to the action legends of the past, like fucking, dude from fucking Omega Man and fucking what's his name? Charlton Heston. All right, they'd have Heston running around with his shirt off, and that dude just built like a damn box, just like a kite. That's what he built like a kite.
Well, like I said, the standards for dudes.
Yeah, flimsy.
I mean, dudes could just get away with like just looking like a dude.
Yeah.
You didn't have to be particularly like handsome. You didn't have to like tweeze your unibrow.
Right.
You didn't have to do anything like that. You could just kind of be charismatic and show up, and everybody's be like, all right, I suppose so.
Cheston was just tall. He had a commanding presence, but he didn't have to work out or be strong. He just whipped your ass just on pure force, I guess. I don't fucking know.
His
Hestonness, I guess. And then that's another thing. It's why they never fucking had Clint Eastwood take his fucking shirt off ever, because Clint Eastwood is just built like a scarecrow. There's no meat on that dude, even in his prime.
He's very lean.
Bones. Yeah, bones.
He looks like one of those old cowboys out on the range.
Yeah, and a kite. Cowboy and a kite had a fucking baby.
Just ate beans and coffee all the time.
Yeah. The only guy that was really the old school action dudes, there's really only two of them that fucking had a decent build. One of them was fucking dude from fucking Death Wish. What's his name? Fucking, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Dude from Death Wish. Charles Bronson.
Charles Bronson.
Charles Bronson was fucking, he was shredded. I don't know if that was natural or not. Probably not. Another one that had a natural build who was fucking a badass, though, was fucking Lee Marvin. Lee Marvin was on D-Day and shit, but he had a soldier background. But he was pretty physical.
Captain Blairdo says, everyone needs to see Riff Tracks, This is Hormel, on YouTube. Ooh, I haven't watched that. I'm going to write that down because I'm actually going to watch that. Write that down over there just on
this
the side.
This is Hormel. Yeah. Okay, hold on.
Mr. Roboto says, you could pull off the fluffy hair, maybe. Me. Perhaps Jenny with feathered hair. I absolutely had feathered hair in the 1980s, as did everyone. Mine wasn't feathered. It was kind of layered.
Hair was just kind of came feathered out of the box when you were in the 70s.
I mean, whether you wanted that done to you or not, they would do it.
That's what was going to happen to you.
Like I said, mine wasn't feathered to the sense, because I knew some girls in high school that were like feathered, and it was like out here, like with the hairspray. Mine was just kind of like layered, you know, like a shaggy layer. And then Mr. Roboto also asked, Tom, if you could go back to the 70s as you are now, would you?
Yeah.
Like, I might for like a day or a week or something, I wouldn't want to go permanently. No fucking way.
Oh, no, not to live.
Absolutely not.
No, but absolutely not. But to go back there for like, you know, a couple years or something. Oh, hell yeah.
I wouldn't even do it for a couple years. Maybe a week.
It depends. Well,
I think I'd get sick of it pretty quick.
If there wasn't anything holding me here, I could go back there and make a shit ton of money. I know.
Well, that's true.
I can fucking basically do.
Well, you could invest in all kind of.
Do what Biff did out of fucking.
That's what I mean. Or you'd like, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah, Apple computer. I'm going to invest in that. Yeah.
That was like Forrest Gump. He invested in Apple because he thought the logo was pretty.
Right.
And ended up being creator.
There's just a lot of stuff that you'd be able to call winners on certain concepts and call winners.
Well, I mean, that's kind of that. You wouldn't even have to go back to the 70s for that. That's just like a time travel. That's just a perk of time travel in general.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that.
And also having a bird's eye view of the fucking culture and knowing what phases are going to come next, you could do all kinds of cool shit. You could become a damn fashion leader, probably, coming up with some fucking fashion that hasn't come out yet, but you know it's going to come out.
Well, yeah, you could have just make it so you were in the right place at the right time. Yeah. And then you'd be like, bitches, check my ass out.
You could go to the right place at the right time and know where some famous people are going to be before they're famous and make friends with them, and then they get famous and now you're famous. There's all kinds of shit.
Although, but if you do that, you're going to mess up the whole, like, space-time continuum. Because we've talked about that, like, in time travel movies.
I think you could mess up everything. I think if you run into David Bowie, you pretty much know he's going to be famous.
That's true, but I mean, him knowing you might have, like, unforeseen consequences. Maybe. That's what I'm saying.
Maybe.
David June says, a trailer that gave it all away, Superman 3 with Richard Pryor.
Shitty movie.
Yeah. That's what he said. He said, awful flick. It was kind of terrible. Although Richard Pryor was good in it, but he's good in everything.
Well, it wasn't either one of their faults. It was that script was not that good.
Yeah.
And the direction was not good. It tried to go a little bit more of a comedic route, and which is terrible because, like, one of the best things about that movie was Richard Pryor, and he was a huge fan of the first one and the second one, and he was really disappointed in that story. You know, he didn't like that movie or that story. But, you know, that's kind of fucking bad in a way, you know. Fucking Pryor really wanted that to be the greatest one. But even when he was making it, he's like,
wouldn't that be a bummer? Yeah. Like, if all that was like your life's goal, I want to be in a Superman movie.
Yeah.
And then you finally get to do it, and then, like,
It could have been worse. Had the wrong director.
Well, you know, like I said, that happens a lot.
Yeah, wrong director.
The thing about movies, and like I said, it's really, considering, and we're kind of, you know, getting back to, like, Eyes of Laura Mars, considering how much trouble this one went through, how many script rewrites, how many directors, how many actors, like, you know, and there was, like, all this tension on the set, the fact that it came out a pretty fucking decent movie, didn't make a shit ton of money, but it made its money back. You know what I mean? It was kind of a moderate hit. But the thing about movies that's kind of, like, different from other types of media is that there are so many people involved to get one made that, to be honest with you, I'm more amazed when something comes out good.
Yeah.
Like, and the fact that most movies are pretty okay.
Right.
And are not just, like, a garbage fire. That's kind of amazing.
According to what Pryor said, when they pulled him onto the movie and he's fucking hearing about what's going on and he's hearing the director, he's like, oh, no. He's like, because I'm in this movie, they're going to try to make it funny. He didn't want to be. He wanted to play.
Yeah,
Pryor wanted to play a serious fucking role in a great Superman episode. And, man, it just wasn't the right director. Donner would have done it. Donner would have made sure.
I mean, as long as he could have said, hey, I want to try and stretch and play something not comedic, which that totally would have worked because look at all the comedians that went on to do drama, like Robin Williams, for example, that ended up being fucking great at it.
Yeah. Well, even to a certain extent, Eddie Murphy can play a straight role, you know, fucking, he doesn't have to be comedic. He played a great vampire. I thought he was great in Vampire in Brooklyn.
Although that one was still kind of funny.
Yeah, well, he had supporting cast. His buddies were pretty funny, but he didn't play it. He wasn't funny in it.
Yeah.
He just played a straight role. And, it was kind of fucking, that was kind of bad for
I don't know.
That would suck. Yeah, you get pulled into the movie and your presence ruins it. Because that's what the director wants. The director wants it to be kind of...
Yeah, and that's another shitty thing is he probably blamed himself.
Yeah.
Because he's if I wasn't so funny, they would have just, like, let me be a normal actor.
Yeah, and then he kind of got his way because he's not being a total clown in that movie. He's trying to be a serious kind of, like, not really a villain because he ended up saving Superman at the end, but he was part of the villain's plan. So he kind of got what he wanted, but because he was in there, fucking that director wanted this shit to, we'll pull in the comedic crowd. Oh, they'll love it. Yeah, no. It's not what, that was a bad, wrong. And that tanked that series. Because 4 was even worse.
Yeah, 4 was terrible.
Yeah. I think, what is it, Canon Films got it, or Carrillo, or one of the...
Or Carolco, or whatever.
Carolco, I think Carolco. It's fucking frog bottom. Some people say it's fun to watch, though, because it's just so fucking bad.
I remember it being hilarious, yeah. But not for the reasons that...
I got it, man.
It's not supposed to be hilarious.
Somebody sent it to me. I haven't gotten around to see it yet.
Oh, yeah, we haven't watched... We watched the first three, but we haven't watched the fourth one yet.
Yeah, haven't watched the fourth one
yet. One night we'll have to get, like, super drunk and watch that shit.
Yeah, watch that shit. But I bet you watch it and it's better than 3. Just because
I don't remember it being better than 3.
No, I remember it being terrible.
I remember it being awful.
Yeah.
And I actually kind of like some stuff about 3.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was actually a pretty decent movie.
Yeah, it's not a loser. It's a half a hit.
I just remember 4 just being ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it in a long time.
3 could have been awesome.
Yeah, 3 could have been great.
It could have been better than 2, but it wasn't.
Captain Blierta said, Tom's unibrow needs to be fire engine red with glitter.
I don't fucking unibrow. Bitch,
you could make one.
Yeah, I had to fucking connect that shit.
And then Mr. Roboto said, unibrows are great. Tommy Lee Jones was never young. He was, though. I mean, he'd been in a few movies prior to this, I think. Yeah. But I had just forgotten, like, how he doesn't look, like, young. He doesn't look like he's, like, fucking 19 or anything. But he looks like he's maybe 30? Tops.
Yeah.
I don't know how old he was in this, but he just, like, I'm just used to seeing him so rumpled and old and grizzled that it's, like, funny seeing him that young.
Oh, by the way, this is the first time I mentioned it to you. I'll mention it to you on the show. Khan of Aztlan sent me some links last night. They think that they found the Zodiac Killer.
Oh, I heard about that, like, a while back.
They're pretty sure.
We'll but see. I didn't know, like, they figured out maybe who it was. The dude's dead, so
yeah,
he died in 2018 or something like that. I don't know if they have absolute, like, DNA proof, but they're pretty sure that might be who it is.
I think it came back that they do have it.
Okay, because, yeah, like I said, I remember reading something about it, like, a few weeks back, and they didn't have, like, DNA proof, but they were pretty sure.
We may want to do a show on it.
Yeah, we should probably, like, write that down. We could do, like, a sidetracks on it, or we could do on the regular show.
Show on it.
But yeah, well, we can't do it like this Wednesday
because
it'll be,
we'll do it on property.
Oh, I have to put it in the Patreon poll though.
All right.
Camp Guy says new serial killer. I just found out about Maury Troy Travis, the videotape killer out of St. Louis. Okay. I'm going to have to write that down too, because I have also never heard of that. Isn't it sad? Even somebody that, like, reads about true crime and fucked up shit like that all the time, I'm constantly coming across new fucking serial killers, and that's horrifying that there's that many. But, you know, there's that whole thing, too. But, yeah, so where did we watch this? This is actually free on Amazon Prime, right?
Is it
Amazon Prime or Hulu? It's one of those two things.
Yeah, it was good.
So you can watch it for free. I was, like, actually really... glad to watch this one again because I hadn't seen it in so long. Yeah. I forgot too that Renee Auberjonois, who played her Laura Mars's assistant, I guess, manager, whatever he was, that I don't think they outright said he was supposed to be gay, but he was like a gay character. So I thought that was like kind of cool that he was, because I think when he got killed, he was in drag. Yeah. Wasn't he wearing?
So, yeah.
He was wearing like Laura's clothes.
I was, I liked it. I thought it was really good. It's aged really well. It's held up. When I saw the Carpenter connection, I was like, oh, really? And then
I had totally forgotten about that.
Feel the Carpenter-ness of it as it goes through.
Even though it's changed a lot.
You know,
like,
it's changed enough, you can kind of see where that was coming from, though. It's like it's in that universe. It's just a good movie.
Yeah, and I mean, Carpenter was a big Giallo fan, so I'm imagining that his version was probably, like I said, even though the killer was, like, just a random dude, was probably, like, a lot more violent. This one kind of doesn't... It shows, like, the aftermath of the murders, but it doesn't actually show the murders happening like an Italian Giallo movie would, so it's not really, really bloody or violent. Yeah. It was almost kind of like I think that was, like, a deliberate directorial choice.
It's good 70s flick. It's fucking kind of seedy, but classy at the same time.
Yeah, seedy classy.
Seedy and classy. Which 70s were.
That's actually a good sum up of the decade as a whole. Yeah. Like, seedy and classy at the same time.
Yeah.
And coke-fueled.
Yeah.
But, All right, so I guess we'll wrap it up for today. Gotta go get... I'm gonna go have a roast beef sandwich, I think. Yeah. I'm starving.
Yep.
But tomorrow, we're gonna do, like, a Thanksgiving special matinee. I think... Was it you, David June? I thought you were here earlier. That sent us Thanksgiving the little box set. So we watched those last night, and so we have some thoughts.
Yeah.
So we're gonna do that as like a Thanksgiving special matinee tomorrow.
Okay.
Because those will be, and I was gonna like record one and put it up extra, but I was like, no, I think it'd be more fun to like talk about live.
Yeah.
Because those two movies.
Yeah, fucking crazy.
Are fucking crazy. Mm. And we had such a good time watching them. But the second one, which is actually Thanksgiving 3, I'll explain it tomorrow. Was one of the, I don't know what drugs they were on when they wrote that, but I really wish they would give me some, because that was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. But yeah, so I guess we'll wrap up this for today. Yeah, go watch Eyes of Laura Mars. It's really good. And we will see you guys again tomorrow. Thanks for super chats, and thanks for hanging out with us this afternoon. Bye.